Welcome to Beyond Our Walls, a podcast from Fellowship Bible Church dedicated to helping you engage your world as you help others follow Jesus. Join us as we hear inspiring stories of gospel transformation from our partners and missionaries. Here's your host, Jeff Geip.
Welcome to our special podcast episode from the captivating island of Lesbos, nestled in the breathtaking landscape of Greece. Joining us today are the remarkable global missionaries, Chris and Amy Moore. Chris, Amy, it's an honor to have you both with us on the show.
Thank you.
So good to be with you today.
Amy, tell us a little about your family and how did you end up in Greece?
Mm-hmm. Chris and I, we have three boys. They're 6 and a half, Clayton, Carter's 5, and Cody's 2. And we've been currently on the island of Lesbos for 2 years now. Before that, we served in Athens for about 9 years, and we work with an organization called Euro Relief.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. So just out of curiosity, how did you and your husband meet?
So I guess the short version is we could have met in Nashville, Tennessee, but God had different plans. I'd been on a maybe 10-year journey with our sending organization, Hellenic Ministries, before moving to Greece in 2013. So I had a long history, a lot of experience, some language under my belt, learning Greek. But I moved permanently for long-term missions in 2013 in January and met Chris on kind of his second vision trip. He was coming, hoping to come in that same year, and didn't think he'd do it, but he did. We both came as singles. Just so happened to be working with the same organization on the same team, working with refugee ministry. So, and we were both in our upper 20s, so single, kind of willing to be single if the Lord had that for us. And instead, we, I guess, fell in love. And yeah, and then a couple years later, got married and started a family.
Wow. So. I mean, in a Christian way, that's the most romantic story you could ever have.
We got a date in Athens. So.
That's right. That is so cool. And just before we get into it, you and I were talking about this earlier. You handed out a few Bibles through the islands here in Greece. Mm-hmm. Was it over a million Bibles or something?
That's
almost
right.
To every household?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there has been a couple different campaigns, but one was called Operation Gideon, which was kind of a two-segmented initiative to do the first 40 in 2004 during the Olympics. And then the second was 2006 to do the remaining islands. And then they took that and created a Bible campaign to pass out New Testaments to all the rural areas of mainland Greece, apart from the two cities, Thessaloniki and Athens. And that was a 12, 15 year.
Yeah.
I'm not sure of the exact length, how many years that was. We'd have to go back and check. But it was a lot, and we were privileged to be a part of most of those years. Yeah.
We concluded it this past July 2023 and the remaining villages that were left throughout Greece.
We and 400 volunteers or so each time. Yeah. So yeah.
That's incredible.
Big initiative.
Several folks from Fellowship were there.
Yeah. So it's just incredible to think that literally every person on the islands here received a New Testament.
Yeah.
That's just remarkable. Mm-hmm. And who knows what God will do with that. I mean, the foundation has been laid, and now you are building on it. So this is so great. So, Chris, I had such a great time visiting the place that you work today. How did that all happen? How did that transpire for you?
Well, I would say what got me to Greece was wanting to serve people from a Muslim background. Come to find out, Greece just happens to be a country where an enormous amount of refugees pass through and hopes to have a better life in Europe somewhere. And Greece is just the doorstep into that. And so the nations are coming through here. And that's what initially led me to come have my vision trip back in 2012. What led us to Lesbos was after, Amy said, 9 years of ministry in Athens, some amazing moments, some really challenging moments as well. So just life happened. And through that, we learned, hey, it's good to have someone that you can care for you, especially in moments of difficulty, valley moments, especially on the mission field or in ministry. And so when I got asked to come be the chaplain for Euro Relief, I jumped at the idea. Not that I thought I was super qualified, but I love the idea of being able to come alongside other workers and be there for them, especially in challenging moments of their life.
And so walking through the camp today, you could see there were many different cultures converging into one place. How many different people groups do you think there are?
On a given month, on average, it's about 30 different nationalities in camp.
Wow. And do you speak all of those languages?
Of course. No. I do well with English. We both studied Greek when we first moved here. We spent several years studying Greek. And so we're semi-fluent in Greek. Got a little bit of Farsi, but just very conversational. So.
And Amy had said earlier that you could say hello in many languages.
Yes. Well, at least he likes to use what he can when he meets people from those cultures.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yes. He collects them as well.
So what does life look like for someone coming in from Afghanistan or from Syria? What does it look like for them when they arrive at the camp?
Yeah. So when a individual or family first arrives to Lesbos, it's a large island, third biggest island in Greece. And so where they land could be anywhere, really, depending on the winds and the water and how things are moving. So they don't really have much control over what part of the island they land on. So they land ashore, and then either they start walking towards the main city, and then as they start that walk, somebody will see them and call it in. And then the police will go and pick them up and transport them to the camp. And upon first arrival, it could be the middle of the night they arrive. There's, no control over that. But when they first arrive, they'll get registered, get a check by the doctor to see if there's any health concerns, and hopefully get some dry clothes and a place to lay their head that night until they're officially housed in the main sections throughout the camp.
Right. Yeah. I was blown away by who makes the houses that people live in.
Yeah.
So in America, if you don't know this is pretty incredible.
Yeah. So the main housing unit we have throughout the camp, they're called RHUs, which stands for Refugee Housing Units. And IKEA manufactures and designs those. So when we're building the RHUs, it's like I'm putting together my bed and my home. So
that's so cool. That is so cool.
Yeah.
And so what I learned today was just fascinating to realize that you're doing much more than just helping them with food or those types of things. There's many different things that you're you're teaching them. Can you share some of those?
Sure.
Some of those?
Yeah, on first contact, we really want to take care of their basic needs to make sure that, their shelter, their food, their water supply, medical care is there and supported. And so Euroleaf does not have our hand in all that, but we do have our hand in some of that. But then beyond that, we want to engage in a much more social way with them that can build up their environment in terms of their mental health, their emotional health. Through that, we do a number of different things like education activities in which we teach English. And we do that through community engagement, whether that's with the men in camp or the women in camp. And there's a number of different ways in which we connect with the refugees, whether it's through sport or through art or music, or even some of our volunteers are there with the women painting fingernails. So all kinds of ways to make people feel less like a refugee and more just like a human.
Give dignity.
Dignity, yeah.
Yeah, when we walked into the women's thing, when Chris invited himself to the women's party,
of course.
You would use that word, dignity, and I thought, man, that's a great word to use.
Well, yeah.
How is that meant to you?
Well, I think there's just this aspect of a stigma maybe around what it means to be a refugee, and they're giving up so much and reducing themselves into this place of completely like surrendering control, and it's it's most likely a better gain for them than what they have to gain where they're coming from. But at the same time, they're losing so much. And so, it's one of the best things we think that can help us stand apart as an organization, is to just instill in them that we care for them and love them and we value them, and that they are just as human as we are and need just the same amount of respect. And so trying to meet them in that place and really give them that is... I mean, and for us, it's whether it's in camp or if you see them in the grocery store, like just smiling at them, like engaging the kids, not judging them because they don't speak Greek or whatever it is. I'm not saying other people do these things, but there's always the chance to show people dignity. And so it's a pleasure to get to do that.
That's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And, when you walk into the camp, I really didn't have any expectations since I had never visited a camp like this before, but I was I was taken back by how clean and organized, and it just felt like this, I could live here in a sense. And then just seeing the availability for people to learn to speak English, to learn just basic educational things that you're teaching them, even down to having the mechanic shop, you know, that was so cool.
Yeah.
The mechanics, they're working on bikes.
Yeah.
But there was an old car there that the kids were playing in.
Yeah.
That was just so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Life happens in there. I mean, there's so much, like, and the dignity thing is like, you know, all these, the residents of camp, the refugees are given a number. They're identified by their number when they're going through security to leave the camp or come back in, or given something, whether it's clothes or food or whatever, they're identified by their number. But as a team, we really think there's so much dignity in just calling someone by name, and really try to value that and encourage our team. You know, as you're serving and working with the people, learn their name, call them by name as best you can.
Right.
And just even that is a dignifying thing. Yeah.
Wow. So I want to have you share a couple stories. One of the stories you were sharing with me today was something that happened to you recently visiting another country. Yeah. What was that about?
Yeah, I mean, this is what it astounds me, is that, like, again, people see someone in a very needy position, like refugee, and think, okay, they don't have a lot to bring to the table. But in fact, I found quite the opposite to be true, is that many of these people come highly skilled or highly educated and have a lot of capability. And so one story, as we talked about earlier, Amy and the boys and I, we were on a week vacation in Vienna, Austria. And we were staying at a hotel where there was a buffet breakfast. And so we'd go get our breakfast every morning. And there was this lady that would come by, and she was there every morning. And she would come and take our plates. And along the way, she began to just really be kind to our boys. And so then it got to the point where when she saw us coming, she already had the table prepared with the high chairs. And she was really sweet. And so halfway through the trip, we asked her, you know, what's your name? She told us her name and asked her where she's from, because I was like, it didn't sound like a German name. And she said, yeah, I'm from Syria, from Damascus. And I said, oh. And I said, well, how long have you lived in Vienna? And she said, for about 7 years. And I said, really? So you came in 2016? She said, yes. I said, okay, when did you come into Europe? And she said, in 2015. And I said, oh, did you happen to go through Greece? And she said, yes. And I said, oh, did you happen to pass through Lesbos? And she said, yes. And I said, did you happen to live in Moria camp, the refugee camp at that time? And she said, yes. And then I said, wow, I have to tell you where I work and who I work for. And I said, I work on Lesbos, and I work in the new refugee camp with the EuroRelief. And at that point, tears just started coming down her face. And she was so touched. And in that moment, I said, well, tell me more about your life in Syria. And she said, yeah, I have a husband, I have children. And I used to be on the nightly news, sharing the evening news in Syria. And I sat there and I thought to myself, I thought, and now she's taking her dirty dishes every morning at this hotel in Vienna. And so as we think about these people and we serve the people, we realize, man, what is stripped of them through whatever crisis they're running from, they're fleeing from, you know, the war in Syria. This woman was stripped of a lot. Mm-hmm. But yet the kindness that she showed our boys and Amy and I that week, she didn't lose that.
Right.
And so it was powerful and profound. Yeah.
Yeah, that's just so incredible. I just can't get over that. Mm-hmm. So I don't get disappointed very often, but I am so disappointed that my flight got delayed, or they bumped me from the flight the other night. So I missed the thing that you did on Tuesday night. Can you tell us, is this a normal thing that you do? And what is that thing?
Yeah, on Tuesdays, I guess our weekly meeting, weekly time together, just an opportunity to have some fellowship, some food together, share a meal that people don't have to cook. It's cooked for them. Do some worship. And it could look different each week, but small groups or like small little, like sharing from the word or things like that. But just a time to be together as a team. And it's nice half the year to be outside.
You were mentioning that some of the people there are not believers.
Right. I would say probably about 98% of our crew here on the island are coming from a faith background. we are very international as well. Half of our volunteer base, which usually on a given week's around 50 people with Euroleaf, half of them are not native English speakers, but they're coming from other countries like, you know, France, Germany, the Netherlands, a lot of European countries. And in that, some of them are not believers. And so it's really cool because all of a sudden, they're not surprised by it. They know kind of in the application process that we are pretty much a Christian organization without being overtly Christian in the camp due to restrictions by the government. So they're okay with that. But then what happens, why they serve alongside us, they're also completely caught off guard by the love and the kindness that they receive from the volunteers who are complete strangers upon arrival to Lesbos. But then when they leave, it's more like family. Mm-hmm. And it's not just family in the sense, oh, we were really good friends. But it was family in the sense that they got to experience things together that would be hard to replicate that kind of experience anywhere else in the world. Mm-hmm. All the while doing it among a Christian community in which they've never had that experience either. So it's kind of like a double whammy, right?
Yeah.
And in that, God does amazing things. Yeah, just last night, I had a volunteer that came to me and said, this was after our Tuesday night fellowship, after the devotional, and she has tears coming down her face, and she says, I just feel so alone here. And I was like, what? Like, that broke my heart to hear. And what she meant by that was that she's not a Christian, but yet she sees the kindness and the love of all these volunteers and the way they talk about God and about Jesus and how there's something that's a mystery in that for her, because she's like, on one side of her brain, she's really like attracted to that and drawn to that. But on the other side of her brain, it's like, this is so confusing for me.
Mm-hmm.
And yet God is working in that.
Right.
Yeah. And it's been amazing because I know the person that was before me in my role, they got to also witness many people who knew nothing of Jesus and came to volunteer with Euroleaf. And then by the time they left, their lives were devoted to Jesus.
That is so cool. So Euro Relief is a ministry from Hellenic.
That's correct.
And so Jonathan's father.
Kostas.
Yeah. Great book, by the way, written by Dan Vorn. Got to read it.
Yeah.
Was just talking about so many of these ministries have come under that umbrella,
yeah.
But now have taken life for themselves, mm-hmm. which is a beautiful, really beautiful picture mm-hmm. of what God is doing through here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was like the vision of Kostas way back when was, you know, to reach the nations. Yeah, do it first in Greece, but then the Balkan countries, but also countries to the east. And what's happening among many different ministries today in Hellenic Ministries, including Euroleaf, is that vision has come to fruition. Yet he's passed and hasn't got to see the fullness of it, but yet it continues.
That's so cool. Yeah. So one of the things we've been talking about in most of the podcasts is Fellowship Bible Church is so generous in giving of their treasures. It's just amazing what God is doing through that church around the world. But we talk so much about it's not just giving of our treasures, but it's also giving of our time and our talents. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I saw today I just thought was so beautiful was a bunch of these Danish people, young people sitting there. Some are working on houses. Some are doing different things. And everybody's using their talents and taking their time. Mm-hmm. And they all looked so joyful. Mm-hmm. Does it just surprise you when people come and how much fun they have when they serve here?
Yeah, they oftentimes get thrown into roles or tasks that they never have any experience in yet, but they're willing to jump in and give it a try. And then through that, a lot of fun can be created. And to be honest, like, it shows. Like, not you saw it. It was evident to you. The residents of camp see that too.
Right.
And I think in every, like, smile that's given or something that someone can see from the outside looking in, it's just it could be a seed planted. God's doing something amazing in that.
Poking our heads into the trailer that was teaching English and that mm-hmm. that woman, Jackie.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
She was like just a ball of energy
and
joy. Yeah. And what a joy she must just bring to the people that she's able to, mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. meet there.
Mm-hmm.
As I was just meeting these people, I was thinking of the people of Fellowship mm-hmm. that have been so giving of their treasure. How could they come and help here? What would be some things that you would suggest they could do?
Yeah, I would say there are many different areas in which a team or an individual even from Fellowship that wanted to come and devote some of their time to this place and use their talents to help serve we have a number of different ways in which we need help, whether it's through social care, working with vulnerable people in camp, whether it's through finances, someone that has good experience and grasp on Excel spreadsheets, doesn't have to be people-oriented, it can be computer-oriented, someone that's great at organizing and managing a warehouse, someone that is a teacher or loves being with children and working with children, they could join the education team. And that process could look like, hey, we take them for 3 years or 3 months or, you know, whatever we could get from someone, depending on how much time they have. That could be someone that's just has a gap year in their university age or someone that's retired and wants to spend their time post-retirement and do something worthwhile around the world. We have all different ages that come and serve with us.
Yeah. Did you hear that, boomers? I was thinking about that, being a boomer myself, and meeting some of the team that was here with Dan from Portland.
That's right.
And they're coming, and you know, some people might think, I can't go there for a month or for 3 months or whatever, but it's transforming. No matter where you are in life, you know, whether you've been walking with the Lord for 50 years or 60 years and you've done all these amazing things, how transformative is it for someone to come here and say, I'm going to dedicate 3 months and come? Some of the kids we met today are heading back home, you know, and is that disappointing for them? I mean, how joyful is it to come and just be able to serve for 3 months?
Oh, I think the answer is in how many people come back, because I think oftentimes the question is, you know, when did you come? Have you been before? And I think often the answer is, oh, yeah, this is my fifth trip or something. And so there's a lot of hellos and goodbyes, but it's very encouraging how many people come back and they're just continue that excitement, enthusiasm, even if it's like, I haven't been here in 2 years, but there's a lot of times so much people that cycle back through dealing with visas and things like that. Maybe they have to go back, but yeah, they're just, we have a good track record with.
Yeah. And it's pretty simple to get a 3 month visa to come and to serve, right?
Yeah, to come serve on Lesbos as a U.S. citizen, you don't even need a visa. You can just come on your passport for a maximum of 90 days, and then you would have to leave. But we also accept people that could just come for 4 weeks as well. So it can be anywhere in between that. It doesn't have to be 3 months.
Yeah. Following Jesus is very simple. Mm. You know, it's simple to follow Jesus, but it's not easy, right? What are some of the challenges? Like, if you were to, Fellowship Bible Church was to be praying for you, what would be some of the challenges? And I mean, you're a mother of three. So what are some of the challenges being an American living in a foreign country, raising three kids?
Yeah, I think I have probably normal struggles that any mom would have. There's can be loneliness, and I'm a stay-at-home mom, so there can be some loneliness there of, I can't always join in on the fun, the exciting, the glamorous. So I'm always reminding myself that they're my ministry. They're my number one place. So sometimes I think I feel a tension and a pull to want to do the flashy, the ministry, the outside the house things. So sometimes that's hard because I had that and then we had a family and I just really wanted that stay-at-home mom life. So giving that up, it can be an ongoing challenge. But I think for me, it's networking, it's making mom friends, it's, you know, finding the ways I can invite people into our home and go on walks with and things like that. Yeah, our kids are in Greek school. So for us, there's a challenge with parenting kids that don't know the language until they are in school and then helping them navigate their homework and feeling different, feeling like an outsider, helping them with homework in a language that we have a grasp of, but we didn't have to do schoolwork in that language. So, you know, even for me, writing notes back to the teacher when I get a note, there's often a lot of Google Translate involved. So I think I have a higher level of stress than maybe what Greek moms have, but we're giving our kids a gift of being bilingual at some point soon. So yeah, we definitely can use prayer, ongoing prayer always for our kids in Greek school as their little lights in their public school setting. Yeah.
Yeah, they're attending a small little national school in a small village on the island here. So it's completely Greek. When you move to a foreign culture, like in your home culture, when it's what you know, the language, you know how to advocate for yourself. But when you move to a foreign place, you lose all that ability to know how to speak up for what you need or when you're struggling.
You don't know what's normal.
You don't know what's normal. You don't know the systems. So it's kind of like even with schooling sometimes. We can see our boys struggling, but we don't know how to communicate that or how they would respond if we communicate that, because it may be completely different than the U.S. school system. Yeah.
Yeah. How about for you, Chris? What are some ways that the body could be praying for you?
Oh, just more Jesus on this island. I mean, that's yeah. Both in our volunteer group, like my hope and my prayer for our entire team, and we have a lot of people that come through here that serve with Euroleaf, because we couldn't do what we do without the hard work of all these volunteers. Last year, we had over 650 volunteers that came and served with us. My hope and my prayer for every single one of them is that when they leave this place, they're closer to Jesus than when they arrived to serve with us. And so I want to also be modeling that. I don't want that just to be a prayer for them. I want that to be a prayer for me, that in our time here and as we serve here, we would just be growing more intimate and more in love with the Lord. Yeah.
Well, our desire through this podcast is that not only that people would desire to come, and so much about being a missionary, the difficulty of being a foreigner in a country is so lonely, you know, and so sometimes it would be just great to have people come and hang out, right?
Yeah. Right? Other people that can say y'all and not laugh at you when you do it.
Yeah. And so, yeah, just giving people opportunity to come and to pour in to you. And, you know, if they can't come for 3 months, they could come and eat Greek food, which, by the way, I'm a fan.
The Greeks know how to do their food for sure. Yeah.
Well, it's a beautiful part of this culture. It's so relational. You know, it's so hospitable. It's just beautiful. Chris, Amy, your dedication and passion for this ministry in this remarkable country is truly inspiring. And I'm just so thankful for you and thankful that you gave us insight to just a little bit of what happens here. Yeah. Just know that we at Fellowship Bible Church are going to be praying for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, we really appreciate you, Jeff, and allowing us to do this. And we're just so honored to be part of Fellowship Bible Church. And yeah, even though we're on a different side of the world, our hearts and our minds are often with the church there and so forth. Yeah. So
that's right. Yeah. And you're coming home this summer.
That's right. We'll be in the Nashville area, June, July, and August. So
very cool. Yeah. All right. God bless you.
Thanks for listening to Beyond Our Walls, a podcast from Fellowship Bible Church. For more information on our outreach ministry, visit fellowshipbiblechurch.org. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, let's follow Jesus together and help others do the same.